Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570. We are Baltimore Positive. We are ready for some football. It's football week. Luke's out in Owings Mills. If there's any breaking news, you'll get that first on the WNST Tech Service. It's all brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. And of course, the Crab Cake Tour returns on the 16th of September. We'll be at the Beaumont in Catonsville eating a delicious crab cake, probably a fried lobster tail that I featured on day 25 of Tastiness. And we are continuing our 27th anniversary countdown of my favorite things to eat. And at some point, there's going to be something delicious. Not beef on weck, not the wings from Buffalo Bar, whatever it was called up there, Bill Bar Buffalo. I had some
Bar
great
Bill.
food up there. Vic Carucci is here. He is a Buffalonian by choice, covering all things Bills for many, many years. He's been around the league forever. You've seen him on NFL films, you've heard him on SiriusXM. But he is Buffalo through and through, almost as Buffalo as Gronkowski, as you pointed out last time, right?
Yeah, and had the absolute pleasure back in November of 24. Rob and I were part of the class of 2024 for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Still tingling about that honor. Still a great thing, but even more so to go full circle with this guy that I've known since he was in seventh, eighth grade, going to school with my younger daughter, and watching him blossom into the megastar that he became as an athlete and future Pro Football Hall of Famer. So just a wonderful thing, yeah.
Well, where's the Buffalo Hall of Fame? Are they going to move it into the new wing of that enshrinement, Jerry's World, the Pagula House that the New Yorkers built? I mean, I tell you what, I flew in a couple months ago because we went to opening day up in
Yeah.
Toronto, and I always fly into Buffalo and get some wings like I do, like I've been known to do, and drive across the Peace Bridge or go up to Niagara Falls. I love your part of the world up there, but when you fly in, you see it, and you see the old Rich Stadium, which. The time had come, and you'll see
Yeah.
that on Sunday night as well. But this is big Renaissance time
Wow.
that people in Baltimore might not, maybe by kickoff they'll know because people like you will be telling them all week. But for your city, this is Camden Yards opening. This is when we got the Ravens 30 years ago. This is a whole new chapter. And as I pointed out, hey man, it might have been Bon Jovi. It might have been somebody else that came in and took that team over to Toronto if there was a different commissioner, if there was different ownership. I mean, the team was in a little bit of peril, and certainly it couldn't keep going on the way it's been going on the last decade, that this is a great thing for Buffalo.
Yeah, for sure. Start with the fact that a 30-year lease is now in place. Not that leases can't be broken, not that contracts aren't broken all the time in sports or any walk of life, but it does add stability to the situation that didn't exist previously. Yes, it's called Highmark Stadium now. Started out as Rich Stadium way back in 1973 when it opened. And in 73, it was a cool looking, and I remember going to games in that place as a teenager, not living in Buffalo, but my dad would drive me out. I didn't have a license then, and watching it then and thinking this is amazing, AstroTurf and all this stuff,
OJ,
and
OJ.
and eventually it doesn't, and OJ and the eventually it doesn't. Hold up as well by 2025, and the all the research that was done by engineers and metallurgy experts said, eventually this stuff erodes, and it's not going to be the concrete and so forth. It's just not going to hold itself together as well. It had great sight lines. And I still think of it as a place where some of my best football memories as a journalist happened. Wasn't so much that I had a rooting interest in the Bills playing. I go there and went there, and of course my career has spanned beyond Buffalo, but to watch football games and to drink in all those memories of some of the greatest comeback and that long list. So it'll be missed there. But you're right, the new one right across the street, whole different, and it's closer to Abbott Road, which the older stadium is set back. So it really comes up on you. And even when you're exiting off the highway to get to it, the entry ramps, this thing just grows out of the ground as such a big massive, impressive structure, and they're still, you know, they're still a ways from getting it done. They're going to be pushing to get that thing ready by the summer of 2026 for preseason games.
Well, in the modern life, you get to see the pictures and the videos. Heck, I see them down here. I think the internet thinks I like the Bills or something. Maybe it's just that the Ravens and the Bills get together too much, which I don't mind because I get to hang out with Vic Carucci. I get to hang out with my Buffalo friends here. All right, man. So, who was the MVP last year? Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen? And then, and you better have some reasoning here because you're a real journalist, Vic. I don't think of you as just being a homer, even if you are in the Buffalo Hall of Fame.
I no, I well, I am absolutely not a homer. And yeah, there's great pride in working here and telling the stories of the Bills and the NFL to this audience. But I love it. I'm blessed to be a part of it. My kids, you know, my grandkids, everybody, there are native Western New Yorkers within our family, except for my wife and I. In terms of the MVP, I can tell you how I voted the last 2 years and take it from there. 2 years ago, my vote, and again, these are the way we do the voting for the Associated Press, is it's on a weighted system, one through five. My top MVP vote went to Lamar Jackson 2 years ago. This past year, it went to Josh Allen. And I know it was a close finish, but I felt in each case, the respective quarterback was the most valuable to his team and more valuable to his team than any other player in the league, even though there were other candidates, and there always are other candidates. But I thought at this past year, especially, it was a closer vote, and the stats would make a very strong, if not stronger, argument for Lamar if you went purely on stats. I tried to go deeper than those numbers. Other voters did, just enough to make it a close margin for Josh to win that award. But I feel I would do it the same way in each of the last 2 years. And I took grief a couple of years ago from those Buffalo people who said, "Why aren't you voting for our guy?"
They still put you in the Hall of Fame.
That isn't how I, yeah, that isn't how I do it. So.
Vic Carucci is here. He is always a great guest to talk football with, and certainly a historian, not just of the Bills, that covered the league for going on 5 decades now. I don't want to date you too much here because you still look like a young man. Yeah, week one, right? I mean, is it a big game? Yeah, sure, it's big. I mean, ask the loser on Monday morning, right? Whoever doesn't win this game, but the Ravens have Joe Flacco coming in here next week, division game. Then they have Detroit. And then they go to Kansas City. So, like this month here, 3-1, 2-2, 1-3, 4-0. I don't think they'll be 0-4, but where the Ravens' level of expectation is and where the Buffalo Bills' level of expectation, both the same place, both converging in late January into early February in Santa Clara. But this is the first part of the thing. We're going to put a lot of weight on this. We're going to talk about it the next 3 days for leading up to the game until it happens. And then afterwards, we're going to treat it like it was war and peace. And somebody's going to lose Sunday night, Vic.
You're absolutely right. You know, it's fortunate and unfortunate that this game is being played when it's being played as a season opener. Okay, not so much that it's in prime time. Of course, that is why it's in prime time, because of the two teams and because of the expectations that exist for those teams, whether those expectations are warranted or not. We've got a while to let that play out, but it certainly feels like the kind of game that you'd want to spotlight and feature for the first Sunday night football game, which generally has the biggest watching audience. I'm sure that game is going to do crazy numbers nationally. But that said, the negative that I see, and the unfortunate, I guess I should say more than negative, but unfortunate, is neither team is going to be ready to play its best football. The fact is that a season opener is still, and I know I'm basically attaching myself to the thinking of Bill Belichick, who, last I checked, knows a thing or two maybe about football, that, you know, the early part of the season, upwards of those first three, maybe four regulars, first four regular season games, that first quarter or quartile of the season, is an extension of the preseason, because not enough is done in terms of honing and preparing in the preseason. We know that. There
Starting with
isn't
tackling,
enough.
just with that,
There
right?
isn't enough practice time, and there isn't enough quality practice time tackling, like you mentioned, contact. It's so restrictive and so limited in terms of on field to get football ready. And we know, I think we know what that all, we all know what that means. And you're playing, now you're playing a game. And so there will be a roughness or rawness that tackling, I think, will be an issue. That could be a thing that favors the Ravens because they've got this guy, Derrick Henry, who, if you're not on your point with your tackle or tackling, he's going to be just rolling along. And we've seen him do that against the Bills, and it didn't necessarily have to happen in the game, in the first game. It didn't in that instance in Baltimore. But I do think for both teams, it'll be true for the Ravens as well. There will be a lack of preparedness, no matter how good those two coaches, and they're really good ones, John Harbaugh and Sean McDermott are, and their respective staffs of getting their teams to, ready to play.
Look, I was the guy that said all along, and you could go back and find the tweets from years ago, if they got a hold of Derrick Henry, they would be unstoppable. That's the word I used, unstoppable. Clearly, they got stopped last year, but it was Mark Andrews dropping the ball up there at the old Rich Stadium, and and all of that. But Derrick Henry creates this situation, and so does Lamar, where football, as Marvin Lewis taught me in his office back in 1996 with Jim Schwartz, another guy you know well from up there in Buffalo, alignment, assignment, technique. You can get the alignment right, you get the assignment right, you get the technique right, and still lose to Derrick Henry or Lamar Jackson.
Right, or Josh Allen, the extraordinary athlete can transcend those fundamentals, those principles, even though they make perfect sense. And I've had the same kinds of conversations not only with the men you reference, but others who have. And what do we do in this business? We observe, we absorb, we try to learn as best we can from those who do this for a living in terms of coaching or personnel evaluation. And then you can see a player just be like this downhill freight train that a Derrick Henry is, or the dynamic running improvisation that Lamar and Josh are always capable of doing. And it's those extended plays that generally, if you look at it, I don't have a hard analytical breakdown of this. I know I'm sure there's one that exists, but my eyes tell me, my brain tells me, how many times have we seen the defining plays of games involving those two quarterbacks, be the ones where they're on the move. The script is gone, the script has burned up, and they're just, improvising, moving, buying time, directing, and a receiver separates because coverage just can't be held that long. It's impossible. And boom, they've got the arm and the accuracy and the vision and the anticipation to make that completion, or their legs, do the job because, again, separation and the defense is all discombobulated.
Well, I mean, I saw Roethlisberger do it here for 20 years. Also, Brett Favre, doing it for years as well. But they didn't have 4-2 speed that when it's all broken down and he's got everybody scrambling and everybody's out of breath, he takes off. And then it becomes a punt return. And four of the guys are the only guys on the field that can catch him. So I've seen it. Vic Carucci is here. This is why we love football, right? I mean, we love football because it's evolving, it's changing. I mean, I'm not big on the new kickoffs, but I understand. And more than anything, keeping players healthy. Vic, as I get older and the players are my age that won the Super Bowl here 25 years ago, and I see how devastating this game can be physically, mentally, CTE, all of that, just anything that keeps the players healthier. But we had such a great year here last year as Ravens fans playing into January because the team was healthy and because the quarterback was healthy, and they didn't have so much fun in other places where their quarterback's not healthy. The game has been legislated in your time, my time of covering the game for 3 decades for me, a lot longer for you, that the quarterbacks have the ability to stay a little more healthy, they're a little more protected. I'm for all of that. It certainly made the game better. It's a better game in January when the quarterbacks that we know to be the marquee quarterbacks are available and healthy enough to play.
And here's the but on that. It's a great point, but you can't legislate health. It just doesn't happen. And that was the thought process. Remember, the rules, the legislation aren't all this just in. They aren't all football oriented. They're not all made by the people whose full dedication and focus is football. Lawyers get involved, suits get involved, business elements get involved, because it is the mega multi-billion dollar industry that it is. Considerations beyond football come into play in the biggest way. And, I can go far enough back to where that was not a prevalent thought, to where the mindset of the league, and by league, I mean ownership of teams and those who ran it from the league office, thought very differently. And the ability to generate the revenue, it was defined very in a very limited way then. I mean, it felt like, okay, this is the right thing to do. You charge for tickets. You sell some merch. But basically, it was very basic, fundamental, and not all that big. And in many ways, there were teams that lost money. That's impossible now. You own a team, you print money, and to keep it strong, you have to have those stars, those quarterbacks who are the stars always. And in some cases, there are teams that have that and little else in the way of star power. And when you look at the Buffalo Bills, it's Josh Allen and a bunch of guys around him. You don't really, find yourself thinking about who else are. You have to push yourself to say, well, maybe no. And it's not like they fill up the Pro Bowl or all pro rosters. The Ravens have a few more of those recognizable names, at least two that are in that upper premier level in Lamar and Derek. But generally speaking, Kansas City Chiefs, Cincinnati Bengals, go down the list. It's if you've got that franchise guy, that's your focal point. It doesn't mean that that guy carries himself necessarily as more important than the rest. If he does, that's a problem. He has to remember he's part of a team. Tom Brady did that as well as anybody. Peyton Manning did that as well as anybody, and they're iconic. We know what they are. But keeping the stress, or emphasis, I should say, of the people who run the league, and again, they start that conversation with ownership. They are the league. Understanding that we better do what we can to make sure those guys are available all the time, or else who wants to watch? And when they stop watching or watch at a lower rate, the revenue, the ability to sell those marketing partnerships and all the sponsorship money that pours in, that floods in like a tsunami every year, will be affected. So this is always a league that's trying to develop those stars. They pray that Jaden Daniels and CJ Stroud and other, and now, from last year, Drake May, Bo Nix, go through the list of those younger incoming guys, that they do blossom as well. Are they going to? We still don't know. Nestor, we're thinking about it, but the hope is that that cycle continues.
Vic Carucci is my guest. You mentioned this. All I can think about is the baseball team here. You don't have baseball up there. By the way, I collected a Buffalo Braves belt buckle in recent times from the NBA. So you, at one point you had an NBA team there, but our baseball team, all the arms fell off, and then and they're the last place team. No pitchers, no October for you. Certainly no Lamar, no January for the Ravens here, and that's to be said around the league. I will say this, Vic, the Ravens, and there's so much respect from guys like you that vote on the Hall of Fame as you do, as I go around and visit with guys like you almost on a weekly basis through the league. When we talk about Lamar, we talk about Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh and what they do here. Almost every offseason, they get a Hall of Famer to sign up here, whether it's Steve Smith, whether it's Jadeveon Clowney, who's in the Hall of Pretty Decent, or last, Hopkins this year decides to come in, Derrick Henry last year. To be able to recruit those kinds of players is just different level in what you can add to what you already have. And Lamar becomes a straw that stirs the drink. Hey, when Ray Lewis and Ed Reed were here, they're recruiting Dion to come play, right? They're recruiting Steve McNair to come play at the end and have good seasons. That is really some magic that not a lot of franchises have that ability.
No, and but it speaks to sure the recruiting that the players are able to do with other players, but what you're also talking about, Nestor, is the structure of the organization, the excellence that's there. Ozzie Smith, Eric DaCosta, coaching from Brian Billick to obviously to John Harbaugh, and seeing those iterations of tradition and the rich defensive tradition that was there. And I still, my mind takes me back. Some of my favorite, go back to favorite memories, working for NFL.com and spending a lot of time around that Super Bowl, Brian Billick, Super Bowl, Ray Lewis, Ravens team, and that defense, and being in awe of how they could dominate when they didn't have that quarterback, when they didn't have him. They literally did it, had their defense carry the load, had a running game, figured it out, and it speaks volumes about how smart your organization is. That thinking and that mindset, is there a bit of luck involved? Sure, good fortune, but it has much more to do with being able to see the right picture and figuring out, game in and game out, and then into the postseason, and then into the Super Bowl, how you get that done. It isn't an accident that teams that have found that success at the very, to the very best. I mean, we're talking about the dynastic Kansas City Chiefs right now. They're the ones, okay, from the AFC until someone says differently. And why do they get there? We know why. And it's the people that are running the show, how smart those decision makers are. And obviously Andy Reid and the front office and the GM, and ownership, of course, has to be supportive. And back to Baltimore, I have the utmost respect for Steve Bisciotti for how it's run, how he sees it, to keep his team as strong as it is, to make those investments, to figure out those very difficult contract situations. Yes, Eric DaCosta and others do the negotiating, but at some point someone's got to put that John Hancock on the check. And in Buffalo, while Terry Pegula, a different kind of owner, but the thing he has done right so far, so well, is entrusting Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean to do what they do so well, leaving it to them. And it's pretty much carte blanche. He can sign off on some things he does and get himself involved, but not meddle. And we see where that goes sometimes, and how, again, the Dallas Cowboys situation. Can you picture anybody that you cover on a regular basis in Baltimore or that I see on a regular basis in Buffalo as being part of that? No. And Brian Schottenheimer has had no chance. I mean, at one point he said, "I'm confident Micah Parsons is going to be on the field for our opening game." Lo and behold, he's going to be wearing a Green Bay Packers uniform for the opening game. So it's that kind of structure and thing. It's not, of course, from a business standpoint, no one does it better than Jerry Jones. We know that. But from as you said, a team that is relevant pretty much all the time, the one and cover, the one I've been around for the longest time, but that they've been relevant since Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean walked in the door in 2017. So that's a pretty good run.
Here's Vic Carucci. We're on a pretty good run here to start the season on Sunday night. We're doing a lot of Buffalo coverage here this week. Luke's out at the Castle in Owings Mills. Any breaking news you'll get first in the WNST tech service, as always. And I'm doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next week. I don't know if it's going to be a crying or a beer crab cake or not. Certainly, as we begin the season with these really, really tough games. You're a believer in the Ravens, right, Vic? I mean, you believe that you and I'm going to bother you again about second, third week of January. I mean, you believe this will happen again, right? I mean, you're in that camp,
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I do. I feel it's going to be, very similar to the conversation that happened between Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes after Buffalo beat the Chiefs, right, in Buffalo in the regular season. And the mics, hot mics caught them in the hug and basically saying, well, we're going to see you, the expectation that they're going to see each other again. And they did in the AFC Championship game. So I would think when this one's over, whoever wins it, there will likely be that discussion again. Yes, I'm a believer that the list of teams that I expect to be the movers and shakers of the AFC at the very top of that list, besides, I still have put Kansas City up there, and I put the Bills up there, I put the Ravens up there. We'll see about Cincinnati. I mean, they're going to be interesting. I put them in the interesting category. I don't know yet what to make of them until they show me they can actually start a season and win some games, from the jump, and be sustainable in the early part of the season. Whatever they've been doing, whatever Zach Taylor and his staff are doing not to get that right, I got to see how that gets corrected. Yeah, they got their, they got Trey Hendrickson done. Did they get it done in enough time to bring him in, get his head right, and everything else, and his contribution? But he was on the field for him last year, early on, and they were all, that defense was pathetic, and is it going to still be? And then I don't know elsewhere in the AFC. I know the conversation about Denver is interesting. I'm not sure how hard I buy into it. I would believe Bo Nix is a better quarterback in year two, and certainly a better one that the Bills befuddled. Absolutely. You saw that in the playoffs, just had him talking to himself. And we'll see how much he's learned from that. But he's got a great coach in Sean Payton to kind of turn that around. And then the CJ Stroud, who through a combination of some of his own challenges of defenses picking up what he did in that historic rookie year, does he bounce back from that and from have the healthier receiving core that he didn't have? The Joe Mixon injury makes that interesting too, or whatever his situation is, kind of shrouded in some mystery that he won't be available at the start. So there's Houston to look out for. And then that's about where I want to stop the conversation. I know that AFC West has the other fascinating point of iconic Coach Central, right? From top to bottom, every team in that division has a coach you can believe is capable of getting his team somewhere and making it making their team impactful. But it takes more than coach to do that too.
Well, we got a good one on Sunday night, so at least we'll start the season on Buffalo. I would say I will see you in January at some point, or see you
Yeah.
later at some point in the season here. Vic Carucci, you can listen to him out of SiriusXM, follow him up in the Buffalo area, doing all sorts of stuff with the league as well as the Hall of Fame vote and everything that's happened in Canton, Ohio. It's always good to it's always good to get back to football. I've had a lot of fun here this summer talking music and politics and local this and business that and crab cake this and my favorite things to eat, but I still like football as much as I like anything. So it's a happy football season, you Vic. Thanks for kicking the
Yes.
season off with us, pal.
Same to you, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Buffalo Sports Hall of Famer. Where is the Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame? I need to know that before I let you go.
So it's at a place called, and this guy's very interesting. The name of Dave, of Dave and Adams. It's a memorabilia megastore, okay,
Okay.
in Williamsville, New York, and so northern suburb. And it's awesome. They have the press conference there each year after the class is announced in June. The display, the person who was in charge of these massive display cases that are lighted beautifully, that have pieces of the memorabilia, and of course from the athletes, it's jerseys, Rob Gronkowski's jersey, Ron Jaworski, a Western New Yorker. His Eagles jersey is in there, and helmet or football. And then Don Criqui, who is a great NBC announcer, his NBC blazer is hanging in there. Memorabilia from Marv Levy and others, Jim Kelly. So with me, my photo, and also one of my 11 books that I've authored about pro football is also on display there. So it's very cool, and maybe I mean it gets emotional every time I see it. But on my phone, I've got these pictures. My daughters have each taken like their, even though we've gone all together, but they live nearby. But they've taken their children over to pose with Pop's picture and display. And take pictures of that, and then when they send that to me, of course, the sap that I am, I get all choked up when I see that.
Well, I tell you what, man, it is like 4 blocks from Bar Bill North, where I had the best wings and beef on weck with the Potota clan, who did the big Mark Andrews fundraiser last year after he dropped the ball. So I'm having those kids on. I might be coming up to Buffalo, not for the game next week. I'm
Okay.
laying low next week for that, but I might be coming up in the next couple of weeks. If I come through, I would love to
Reach
go to the
out.
Buffalo Hall. I mean, I'm hoping that Rasig has some piece of artwork in there, being a Buffalo guy. Because when I think of the Buffalo Hall of Fame, I think of Frank and Teresa's anchor bear. And I see, and I go in there. That is a little bit like a Buffalo Hall of Fame. I would think there's
is.
something of yours in there, Victor. There, I hope there is.
There might be. I have. There have been. I'm fortunate to have some really great friends in this town because it's that kind of town, as I'm sure Baltimore is with you, where you get to know people well. And yeah, we take some photos with owners of different restaurants. The nice part about doing this stuff is sometimes, not all the time, so sometimes it gets you a table on those busy nights, as long as you don't come in with a massive party. But if my wife and I have last minute dinner decisions, and I can just shoot a text to one of my great friends who own some of these wonderful places. Oh, we'll have a table for you. Okay. And you don't have to wait like all night
Well, you
to
tell
get
the
to see
Bar
me.
Bill North people, this is a free plug for them, and this is in the middle of my tastiness journey. The best chicken wings I've ever had in my life, and the
Wow.
best beef on weck. I mean,
It's great. It's
it
great
was
stuff.
outrageously good. As I got invited there after opening day, Luke was with me. Pro Football Writers Association, Luke Jones. He's our
There you
chapter president here in Baltimore.
go.
And we went there, and I was just blown away by how good it was. So like. Football's gonna get me ready for some food on Buffalo. Vic Carucci, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate you as always.
Always the best, Nestor. Talk to you.
I can walk right there around the corner in Williamsville. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Been too long without football and avenging all that was not right in Buffalo last January on Sunday night. Long season ahead. Stay with us.